May it please the court.
Sure.
I'm here on behalf of Lonnie Brown. This is another differentiation on the question of the lesser included offenses and whether what was submitted at trial was sufficient to test the mental state of Mr. Brown. The jury was instructed on first degree assault for attempting to kill or cause serious physical injury by shooting, and they were instructed on assault in the second degree, and that instruction said that he attempted to cause physical injury by means of a deadly weapon by shooting. The judge refused to give an assault third instruction for recklessly creating grave risk of death or serious physical injury by shooting. Our argument is that the assault second instruction that was submitted didn't test the mental state of Mr. Brown, only the degree of injury. The difference was between causing serious physical. The assault second degree tested the serious physical injury versus physical injury, but did not test the mental state of Mr. Brown. Only the third degree assault instruction tested whether he recklessly created a grave risk of death or serious physical injury. And I think, again, the state concedes that this is error, but argues that there was no prejudice. Again, this is truly a nested lesser question, just like the first two cases, because it's both a statutory lesser and but assault third degree is a nested lesser of first, not of second, in this situation. And all of these are very fact specific. Assault third, since it's nested in assault first, the jury was never able to test Mr. Brown's mental state and whether he acted recklessly. The state says that it attempted to cause physical injury, test the jury verdict of attempting to cause serious physical injury. But under these facts, it was clear that the jury could easily have found that Mr. Brown acted recklessly, maybe in waving the gun around and shooting, trying to let the person know on the phone that he was there with his brother and that he didn't actually intend to kill him or cause serious physical injury, but this was a stunt and he was acting recklessly and placing him at grave risk of death or serious physical injury. So the jury didn't actually get to evaluate what Mr. Brown was doing, whether he was acting recklessly or purposefully. And there's no real difference between attempting to kill or cause or attempting to cause by means of a deadly weapon. They both involve a gun in assault first and second degree. The only question was whether he was intending serious physical injury or just physical injury. I think this court should apply the Frost exception again, where the defendant was charged with murder second, instructed on voluntary, but the Western District reversed for failure to give involuntary because the voluntary had sudden passion, and so it didn't test the mental state, recklessness of involuntary manslaughter. This is the exact same situation in that the jury didn't get to evaluate the reckless conduct of Mr. Brown in light of the other two instructions.
But Frost had the imperfect self-defense issue that we don't have here. Isn't that a distinction, or does that matter?
I don't think it matters. I mean, to be consistent, in Jensen, there was no self-defense, and the issue was that of duress. Here, there's nothing in the second degree instruction that tested that mental state. And so we're just left with the question of the only way the jury could convey what they believed Mr. Brown was doing, and the defense hinged on the fact that he was acting recklessly, but the jury had no way to effectuate that if, in fact, they believed the defense. The jury could have found recklessness, that he consciously disregarded a substantial and unjustifiable risk that he would cause serious physical injury or death, and that that was a gross deviation from the standard of care that he would have exercised in that situation, but But again, nothing in the second degree instruction tested that. And so I think that's where the prejudice results, whether or not he was acting in self-defense.
If we agreed with you, sent this back to be retried, and the trial court gave all three instructions, I think the state is concerned that you will come back here and say, well, see, what they didn't do was give another assault third that tested the degree of injury. So yes, we tested recklessly, but we didn't say recklessly with respect to just physical injury. How do we bring this to some close?
Well, I think we need to fully instruct the jury and submit all of these instructions. So that cures the problem. And actually, in all of these cases were tried before Jackson and Pierce. I think Mr. Brown actually might have been a couple of months afterwards where it hadn't fully gotten down to the trial courts yet. But we are seeing no cases in where juries are not being instructed, fully instructed. So if the defense put on evidence such as what you're saying, they would ask for the instruction, it would be given, and we wouldn't be here talking about prejudice. We're only talking about prejudice because these instructions weren't given. We're not seeing that anymore. So this may be a very narrow universe of cases that we're having to deal with. I think where my concern comes is that if you say there is no prejudice from any of this, then some prosecutor out there is going to say, tell that judge, I mean, that's a routine argument, is that, well, you're not going to get reversed on appeal because this clearly isn't prejudicial. We don't think it's prejudicial. And so I think it opens another can of worms. Like, we don't have to instruct because we know we won't be reversed on appeal.
St. Jackson are working. Go ahead. In effect, you're saying they're working. Everybody understands them and is applying them. The line is clear.
I can't think of a case that we've had after Jackson and Pierce, except for these, where the instruction wasn't given, where they are not being instructed. Maybe there are some. Mr. McElprain handles all of these cases, so he possibly knows of some. But it is very rare where the juries aren't being instructed. I think they've digested it, and they're giving the instructions. So we never are going to have to look at this question of prejudice.
Well, the difference is before Jackson and Pierce, we were testing whether the instructions should be given based on whether there was a basis in the evidence to be giving a different instruction, right? And prejudice was presumed if you didn't give a MAI instruction, that prejudice was presumed, and it was difficult, if not impossible, to rebut that because the instruction wasn't given. With respect to whether a lesser should have been given was determined on whether there was a basis in the evidence to give that lesser instruction. That was the difference before Jackson and Pierce. Do you agree with that?
I agree that that was the standard before Jackson and Pierce, but I think in terms of these nested lessers, now the trial courts are aware that they have to give them because it's only the jury who gets to decide that in the first instance. And so there's really no harm from giving the instructions because if the evidence is truly so overpowering, then the jury probably isn't going to find it. But that's for them to decide, not us, on appeal. So I think all of the trial courts are digesting this case law and that prejudice is not going to be a big question. But I think here, clearly, he wasn't given instructions. State has conceded error. Nothing tested the defendant's mental state. And prejudice is presumed, and he needs a new trial.
Any other questions? Thank you.
May it please the court. Boy, I feel like just saying, with regard to prejudice, fourth verse, same as the first, right?
Groundhog Day.
I apologize if this is like a bad dream for you, but here I am again to argue that there was no prejudice. And here's the thing. On this case, I think that this case is actually, I think, easier than the other cases. The element in the charged offense was attempted to kill or cause serious physical injury to the victim by shooting. Now, all three of the instructions at issue here dealt with shooting, right? So that's not being tested. So the charged offense had the specific intent of attempting to cause death or serious physical injury. Not to actually cause it, but that it was the intent, the specific intent of the defendant. The lesser that was submitted directly and expressly tested that specific intent because it submitted attempted to cause physical injury. So what if,
as opposing counsel says, was the defense, the purpose was a stunt to scare the brother on the phone and say, I'm shooting at your brother, but he wasn't really shooting at the brother. He was trying to scare everybody. And so he was being reckless.
Right. That would be a different theory. The defendant's assault third was that the defendant recklessly created a grave risk of death or serious physical injury. Now, that doesn't actually test the specific intent of assault one any more than assault two did. Assault two already tested the specific intent of attempting to kill or cause serious physical injury. The jury, if it had not had that specific intent to kill or cause serious physical injury, it could have come down to attempted to cause physical injury.
And what if they thought he didn't intend to do either of those?
Then they would acquit. If he did not have that specific intent, then they would acquit. They had the option of being able to come down to find that his intent was not as great as the state had charged that it was to kill or cause serious physical injury. They could have found that his intent was only to cause physical injury, but they didn't even come down to that. So if they didn't believe he had that lesser intent, which specifically and directly tested the greater intent, then they would have acquitted. Now, there is the other theory presented by the defense that he recklessly created a grave risk, but that doesn't further test the specific intent of assault one, which is already firm and firmed up by the jury's decision.
But if you shoot a gun at someone and you're intending to hit him, you intend to cause death or serious physical injury.
It doesn't.
But if you're not intending to hit him, then you're being reckless. I don't.
It doesn't further test it because both can simultaneously exist. I can have the specific intent to kill or cause somebody's death, and simultaneously, recklessly create a grave risk. One is a specific intent that was tested by assault two. The other is a result, is an actual result that can coexist with the greater one. And so while
assault two doesn't test the intent to hit him with the bullet.
It certainly tests the specific intent.
Is that argument
applicable in the Jackson and Pierce cases also simply because they found him guilty of the greater offense?
No, that's not my argument. My argument here is that this lesser that was submitted in assault two specifically tested the greater the intent of the greater offense. You don't have that. I guess I make that argument as well with regard to voluntary manslaughter testing murder. But even if the analysis of Frost is going to be followed, and the court reaches the conclusion that voluntary manslaughter doesn't test, voluntary manslaughter doesn't sufficiently test murder too. In this case, the lesser that was submitted absolutely and directly tested the specific intent of the greater offense. It specifically tested whether he had the specific intent to cause serious physical injury or death, because it asked, did he have the lesser specific intent of attempting to cause physical injury?
And now, if they thought he didn't have the specific intent to cause any injury,
then they would acquit.
But they thought he was reckless and didn't want to walk him.
Well, if they harbored doubts about assault one, they could have come down to assault two.
Not if they didn't believe that he had the specific intent to cause an injury.
But if that's going to be the argument, then they also can't enter one on assault one. I mean, if we're going to say that they harbor doubts as to one and two, why do they enter a conviction on assault one? It stands to reason that they would not act irrationally. If they don't want to acquit, then they're going to select the lesser. In this case, though...
So again, you're coming back to the argument that anytime there is a lesser offense and they commit on the lesser offense, then we know there shouldn't be any prejudice.
I agree, Your Honor. I am reiterating the argument I made before, which is that if there is a lesser, but in this particular case, I think that the reliance on Frost is misplaced because in this case, there was testing of the specific intent of the greater offense, a direct testing of it. Could it have been further tested by the submission of assault third? Absolutely. Because assault third would give another option, and which would further tell us that they were firm in their belief that he committed assault one. But we already know that they believed he committed assault one. To the extent that they may have harbored doubts about that, they had the option to come down to assault two. They didn't, even though the only difference between the two was the specific intent. So that specific intent, which was the element of the greater offense, was specifically tested here. Now, any one of these scenarios could be supported by the evidence. Because if I have the specific intent to cause serious physical injury, and I shoot a gun at you, and my intent, the thing that's in my head, is that I want to cause your death, but I miss. I have also, arguably, recklessly created a grave risk of death to you if that bullet, say, hits the wall right next to your head, or if it grazes the side of your head. I've done both.
Well, that's why it's nested, and that's why we say knowing leapers recklessly and recklessly knowing.
Well, this one's not nested, though, because it has a result element that doesn't appear in the greater offense, that you actually create the grave risk. You don't have to create a grave risk for assault one. So this isn't nested, but it's still an included offense because it's specifically denominated by statute as a lesser degree offense. It's assault third. So we have assault one, two, and three. So it's still an included offense. It's not nested, though, because it has an element that's totally separate.
So Jackson doesn't apply.
This is not a Jackson case.
This is not a Jackson case, and you're left with the question of whether the evidence was supported by substantial evidence. I mean, the instruction was supported by substantial
and
evidence.
And it was. The instruction should have been given. I've conceded
it was
that
error.
It was
error. It wasn't Jackson.
Right, it was error. But it wasn't the same kind of error that was in Jackson because this isn't nested. But it was still error not to give it because the principles in Jackson, I think, are to a certain extent still applicable. So the trial court should have given the instruction upon request. But again, like I said, the fourth verse here of my song is the same as the first. I don't think that there was prejudice, and the court should look at the facts of the case and ascertain whether there was prejudice. And here, because the greater offense was specifically tested by the middle...
Didn't it test the type of injury Blurton's, you intended?
I thought that Blurton suggested that the Jackson analysis only applied to nested lessers.
You know, I can't remember if the court said that in Blurton. It may have been, I do recall some language along those lines. And it may be that the court, to this point, has only looked at, well, in Blurton, as I recall, that's right, that was a felony murder case. And the court said that this was not a Jackson situation. And the court in that case found that it would have been error to give the instruction that was proposed by the defense because it wasn't in proper form. And because the errors that were contained within it could have misled the jury. The court didn't then move on and address whether, had a properly drafted instruction been submitted, whether that whether it would have been prejudicial not to give it. The state argued in that case that it wouldn't have been prejudicial because the jury had other intervening options. So Blurton didn't ultimately, I think, reach the prejudice question which these cases present.
Right, but Blurton did say that Jackson applies to nested lessers.
It did.
And not to unnested lessers.
I don't remember if it said that, but I will take your word for it, Your Honor. I do remember there being language in there about Jackson dealt with nested included offenses, and this case does not present a nested included offense. And I agree, felony murder is not nested, although it is an included offense under 565.025, which sets forth the lesser degree offenses for murder in the first degree. I think that unless the court has further questions, I've probably said all that you want to hear from me, and I'm not sure that I have anything additional to say, except I would just point out that I don't think that prosecutors are going to go out there and argue, Judge, you should commit error because you won't be reversed on appeal. In all of my interactions with prosecutors, and I've had various interactions, and I've been able to present training for prosecutors and for judges, my admonition to them has been, follow Jackson. If something is requested, and it's required under the law, submit it. But there will still be cases where there is error. It's not always a clear-cut case that the requested instruction is an included offense. We've had several cases since Jackson where defendants have requested an instruction. The trial court has said, no, I'm not going to give it because it's not an included offense. And they were right. There will come a case, though, where they are not right because they do the elements test wrongly and incorrectly determine that it either was or was not an included offense. There will be situations where these errors arise. And so the court needs to take a look at whether those errors always require a reversal.
And since you're here, you know we're looking at it.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you agree that the lesser included offense you're asking for here is just a statutory lesser and not a nested lesser?
No, I think it's a nested lesser of assault first, and that's why it has to be given. Because
you said it wasn't a lesser of assault too, but it was a first.
A first. And you can have both. And I think the case that closely governs this is State versus Nutt. And in that case, they cited Frost and said that the reason there's prejudice is because there was a theory that the third-degree assault instruction in Nutt would have put before the jury a theory that had yet to be rejected. And I think that's what we have here. Recklessness was a strong defense in this case, and wasn't put before the jury. It had yet to be rejected. And just because they convicted of assault first, clearly they thought something happened, that Mr. Brown did something. And the assault first was for serious physical injury. All we know is that by not going to assault second, they didn't think it was just physical injury. We don't know what they thought about his mental state because that was only tested by the assault third instruction. That's why it was required. That's why prejudice results.
The state's argument, though, is that it's not nested because it requires an element. It's not a subset of either second or first assault because the jury has to find that a substantial risk was created, separate and apart from what the defendant intended. What's your response?
I disagree with the fact that, the only different issue in that case, despite the specific wording, is what is his mental state, reckless versus knowing. That the created a grave risk is part of the recklessness. It's not a separate element. And if there are no further questions, I'd ask for a new trial for Mr. Brown.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.